Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. You can also chime in via Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll look ahead to the Rams game this weekend. We'll give you the latest injury report. And Pro Football Focus had projections for the NFC East win total.
That?
Yes, in the second half of the season.
And I think a lot of you fans will be very happy with what they said.
I don't know. Is that the case?
Look, we won't reveal that for quite a few minutes yet.
Correct.
But here's what I will say. I'm not going to go double talk here. You folks know, as far as analytics are concerned, I think they have a place in terms of data. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of the analysis that comes off of them, okay? But the pure data does make for some interesting conversation. Let's put it that way.
Yes, indeed. So we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's start, though, with the practice report. The team is practicing as we speak, and it doesn't seem, based on the reports from the media session, that there have been any drastic changes, Paul, on the injury front. Weston Richburg is still recovering from the concussion, so he is still on the side, as well as Olivier Vernon, Justin Pugh, Kerry Wynn, and B.J. Goodson, who also have been observant for the most part over the last few days.
Yeah, about the only thing that I think you can look at from an upgraded standpoint this week since the bye is that Paul Perkins is working in full after a couple of weeks dealing with really sore ribs. And then, of course, he had the bye to rest up and heal up. And when I talked to him yesterday, he said he not only is a full go at practice, but he fully believes that he'll be part of the game plan and playing on Sunday. But other than that upgrade, I don't know that there's anybody else significantly upgraded on this list. I mean, even Sterling Shepard is limited on his sprained ankle, despite the optimism that he's been expressing on more than one occasion that he would be back and ready to go. He's still limited. So I don't know about him for Sunday.
Well, and what happens a lot, Paul, when players have multiple injuries to the same spot, which was the case for Sterling Shepard, you're optimistic because you're hungry to get back on the field, but I think maybe from a medical standpoint, correct, they want to take it a little bit slower. The only guy that I would classify as an upgrade is Nat Burhe, who was back at practice. He was out yesterday with the calf injury, and Rhett Ellison returned, but he's not hurt. It was just a personal reason.
Right, and Burhe was just a one-day thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm talking about the past.
In terms of a guy that's had
list.
A lingering thing. No, I'm with you there.
To me, the downgrades, if you will, to some degree, Kerry Wynn got hurt in the Seattle game a couple of weeks ago, had to come out with a tweaked knee. And, again, he's not been working this week at practice because of that knee. Now, you guys know Cappy went on injured reserve. The Giants brought back Devin Taylor.
Yep.
Because they felt that they were shorthanded on the defensive line. Again, still not knowing if Olivier Vernon's going to play because of the sprained ankle. And so they had to go and they activated Williams, too.
Jordan Williams was promoted from the practice squad. Correct. Those are the two returnees.
So, you know, that tells you that they are seriously concerned about the availability of the veterans. Otherwise, they wouldn't have brought those guys up.
Well, and Olivier Vernon is another one who this injury has lingered, Paul. I mean, it's multiple weeks now, plus the bye, that he has been sidelined because of the ankle injury. So I think it says a lot about the significance of that injury. He was hurt, remember, going back to that Eagles game.
Yes.
And then he tried to get through the next game and just couldn't get through it. Couldn't
get through the Philly game, was unable to finish.
Had to leave late.
Unable to finish the Tampa game.
Yep.
I mean, you know, and look, again, folks, there are so many things that have happened to this club over the course of the season. I don't want to make an excuse, but I do want to say Olivier Vernon was a very, very strong impact player for this team last year. Very strong impact player. I think he played at a Pro Bowl level. I really do, despite the fact that he didn't have double digits in sacks. We've talked about it, the pressures, the hurries, the play against the run. I thought he was one of the best three defensive players on the field. I really did, in terms of impact. He was that good.
Versatile, yeah.
That good. And that's saying a lot when you consider that Harrison and Jenkins, you know, and Collins were on this defense.
DRC
was on the guys who did get the awards. Vernon didn't get any awards. He was that good, though. He really was. So it's a darn shame. And a guy who's incredibly prideful, too. Remember, he had not missed a game in his NFL career till this season.
Went 80-plus straight games, going back to his days with the Dolphins. Durable.
I feel bad for him, and I think it really stinks because he is the kind of guy who really can make a difference in a game. So that's been a real bummer for this team as they've continued their their troubles and their missteps during the course of the year.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the front seven, because I want to shift gears here to the matchup this weekend. And I know we've talked about this throughout the course of the
week. Todd Gurley!
Yes, Todd Gurley, number one. 4 100-yard games in 7 contests, Paul. It's no coincidence. The Rams
will come in the last month or so.
And the Rams are 4-0 when he surpasses the century mark. I don't think anybody should be surprised. You could say that for most backs, but when you have a young quarterback, the emphasis of the run game is so important. So the job that the defensive ends are going to have to do to seal off the edge goes without saying. But I think also getting to Goff and flustering him and throwing him off. Now, we could say this every week, Paul, it's important to get to the opposing quarterback. That's nothing new. But I think you maybe have to step up the emphasis of that this week, given the fact that although Goff, I think, has made significant strides from his rookie year to his second year, and a lot of that has to do with the new system, the new coaching staff with Sean McVay, I think it also says a lot about he still doesn't have a great deal of experience facing all types of defenses in this league.
Well, that is true. And I will say that Todd Gurley, the bowling ball that he is, I'm surprised that he's had the renaissance this season that he has had. Because if you remember,
down year,
he came onto the scene and he was a real force.
That was in 15. Yeah.
And then last year, it was like, oh, you know what? Maybe he's not durable enough. Maybe he just doesn't have the ability to keep up with the big boys, because he's rather slight in terms of stature, even though he's thick. And it was like, you know what? Maybe he can't play that power running back role because he just can't take the pounding and be as productive as you need to be. Well, this year, he's back to that. But here's what I would say, Lance. I have a small disagreement with you. Goff is a game manager in the truest sense of the word. He's the only quarterback this year in the NFL with at least 200 passing attempts with a less than 60% completion mark. He's at 59.9. Has it only had one 300-yard game. It was opening day against the Colts. Hasn't had one since. Has actually had a couple games where he was less than 50% completion mark. Okay? It's very simple. Their defense has been really stout lately. The last couple of games they played before the bye, they didn't give up, I think, more than 30 combined points.
Yeah, and okay? They've been opportunistic, too, in terms of takeaways and touchdowns.
Yes. They stop the run well. Okay? They get some key takeaways. They run the ball and run the ball and run the ball and run the ball well with Gurley in the power run game. And they basically tell Goff, don't screw it up. He's like the new Trent Dilfer. Okay? That's seriously.
Well, Dilfer got a Super Bowl. So
I know he did.
It's not necessarily a slight on him.
I know he did. But that's what he is. He is a game manager. Okay? So getting to him, to me, isn't that big a deal. What you want to be able to do is confuse him mentally. So I agree with you there, but I don't think getting to him is important. I don't think you need sacks on Goff to beat the Rams.
Yeah, and I wasn't necessarily referring to sacks. I mean, quarterback hits, deflections, things to just sort of get him out of rhythm.
I just think mess with his head so that he's seeing things he doesn't think he sees, and getting him out of his passing game that way by messing with his head, playing mind games with him. And I also think, of course, and we talk about this a lot of times, because he's a manager, okay, now I know they like to go for big plays.
Well, that's why.
What you want to do is mess with his receivers.
Correct. So that the rhythm and the chemistry
that's
is not
it.
There.
Not so much about – so I don't agree necessarily about getting to Goff. I think you can mess him up in other ways, and that, to me, would be a little bit more important. But I get your point in that he has been a guy who doesn't screw up games for them to this point. That's why they're 5-2. Look, they think they're going to the playoffs.
Well, they're certainly in position to do that.
Well, not if they lose Sunday.
It will hurt them, but I think they've played consistent football, far more consistent football this season than we've seen in previous seasons. And to your point about, you know, Goff being a game manager and Gurley coming through with a renaissance, I think a lot of that, you can't overlook, Paul, is quarterback play last year, offensive system performance last year, and I think their offensive line has come a long way, too, if you compare what they were working with last year versus this year. And offensive line and the running game go hand in hand. So, you know, those things can't be dismissed as to why Gurley maybe wasn't having as productive of a year in 16 as he is this season. I agree with you about they do need to pressure these wide receivers, because if you look at the Rams receiving core on paper compared to some of the other teams the Giants have faced, this is not a group that jumps off the page.
No.
It's not at all. No. But it's one of those games where, Paul, you give them an opening, Robert Woods can get a 40-yard catch. some of their tight ends. Gerald Everett can make big plays. These guys are capable of making big plays, is my point.
Everett, interesting, has the only touchdown catch by a Rams tight end this season, which is very interesting because, as we all know, the Giants have given up a tight end touchdown.
8 in 7 games.
Every game this year.
Well, 2 had in 1 game, remember.
Right, but every game this year.
Yes.
And Everett's the only one who's got one for the Rams. They don't use the tight end very much in that capacity. Will they try this week? Maybe.
Well, I would assume based on the trend, Paul, you could criticize them if they don't at least try.
But see, for me, and look, soft spot in my heart for FCS players, Kupp is the guy who I'm going to enjoy watching because I watched a lot of tape of him coming out for the draft. And you know, I just really, really like this kid. And I think he's a heck of a guy. If you've listened to interviews, he's a really good guy. And I think he's a heck of a player. And he's just a good, solid football player. And keep your eye on Kupp, though. That's a guy who I think can do damage.
Well, he's the third-round pick out of Eastern Washington, in addition to Robert Woods. And, you know, we haven't talked much about Sammy Watkins, but let's face it. I mean, outside of that big game he had against San Francisco, Paul, it's almost like he's a decoy ever since they acquired him from Buffalo. He's not putting up monster numbers. He's not getting a great deal of targets. He's got 29 targets. That puts him fourth on the team. Gurley's ahead of him. Woods is ahead of him. Kupp is ahead of him. So, you know, it's amazing how they're taking essentially their number one wideout out of the equation, yet they still won 5 of their first 7 games.
I will also add another name to that same basket of disappointment, Tavon Austin.
That's another good one.
I continue to have people say to me every time the Rams play, oh, watch out for Tavon Austin. And I shake my head and I'm like, okay, does somebody want to turn the light on in his head? Because Tavon Austin has been this speed-burning, versatile game-breaker who hasn't done anything, much less even break a pane of glass in his NFL career.
He's been quiet. It's more of like a gadget type of player that they maybe try to run an end around. They actually, I believe they attempted to do that against the Giants, if memory serves me correctly, in London last year.
No question.
Right now, he's a special teams player. He's their punt returner.
It's amazing to me at how much respect that he got early in his career and then never did anything to earn it. And yet still people talk about him occasionally as being a guy who can hurt you. I get it. He's fast, but where's the production?
Well, and remember, they also gave him an extension.
Yes.
When Jeff Fisher was still around, early in the season.
One of the reasons Fisher's not there anymore.
You could certainly make that argument. No disagreement there. And Sean McVay, without necessarily Austin and Watkins doing the heavy lifting, to your point, has leaned on his defense. Remember, Wade Phillips is the defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. He's got a great track record.
No
you
question.
Can't overlook that. They've got an immense amount of playmakers in their front seven. What's interesting to me, I don't know if you've looked at the numbers. I'm sure you have. 23 sacks, Paul. 10 different players have at least one, 8 have at least 2. This is not a defense. You know, people are going to be like, oh, you got to watch out for Aaron Donald. It's not so simple. It's not that simple. Brockers, they've got Ogletree, they've got Connor Barwin, they've got a number of playmakers in that front seven.
And we talked about this before the season started, that the Giants have trouble with 3-4s where they have a monster nose tackle. Brockers is one of those guys.
Yep.
This is a defense that the Giants, the scheme, the style of defense, the Giants usually have trouble with. Now, Brett Jones looks like he's going to start again this week. We know that Richburg's been on the side with the concussion. Brett Jones is an undersized center. Brockers is going to try to just gobble him up for lunch. Now, can the Giants give him help with Fluker? Problem if you do that. You know, the other guy. On the other side, you got Donald and you got Westbrook who are playing defensive ends in this 3-4 scheme. If Pugh can't go because of the bad back, you got to put Bobby Hart back out there on the edge. Bobby Hart hasn't exactly played so well to make coaches feel comfortable with him. So, you know, if Fluker's going to try to double team inside on Brockers, now you're leaving your tackle in a one-on-one situation. Again, unless you're going to keep your tight end in. Or if they activate Shane Smith. Which, by the way, is an interesting question. Can I throw this out to the fans, please? Guys, we don't do this much during the season. We do it in the offseason. We don't throw questions out. I'd like to know, would any of you like to activate fullback Shane Smith from the practice squad? Now that the Giants have come back from the bye, they have examined their playbook, and they are depleted at wide receiver. Would you like to activate Shane Smith and give him another shot to run a fullback-oriented attack? Would you like to see that? Because he didn't get much of a chance before they sent him down.
No, he didn't. But also part of it was the snaps were not necessarily there, the volume. It's the same thing with Rhett Ellison. You know, it's one thing to bring up a player, Paul, but I think maybe the second part of the question is not only do you want to see him on the roster, but you also want to see his snaps increase. Because what's the purpose of bringing up a player if you're not going to utilize him?
And agree with you. So my question is that to be termed a failed experiment, or would you want to see more of it?
My answer to your question would be I want to see more of it, because I think, in fairness, the sample size was quite small. I mean, was there enough out there this year
not
to say that you saw enough out of what Shane Smith can do?
No. That's why I bring up the question.
My answer would be no to that. That's essentially why I can understand the argument to bring him perhaps up and then give him some additional snaps, and we'll see whether or not they choose to do that in the second half of the season. We're going to get to your phone calls here in a second at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. A little bit later on, as we teased off the top, we're going to get to Pro Football Focus's projections for win totals in the NFC East. I think some interesting points there, but we have some sad news to pass on before we are to get to the phone calls, and Joan Tisch, the mother of Steve Tisch, has passed away. And Jonathan, indeed. So Ann Mara passed away recently as well, and now another matriarch as part of the Giants franchise has been lost.
Bob Tisch, who bought into the Giants franchise, as you guys know, many years ago, he was half owner, became with the Maras. Bob was a great guy, and this was Bob's wife. I did not know her as well as I knew Bob. You know, I always used to call him Mr. Tisch, and he would say, no, call me Bob. I'd still call him Mr. Tisch. I out of respect.
Of course.
But Joan was always by his side and a sweet woman, and obviously we know Steve and Jonathan. So our condolences to the family and all of those involved with the Giants organization for the loss. And we certainly wish that they have enough of strength to get through these tough times.
With that being said, let's open up the phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Ken is in New Jersey. He gets us going on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. How we doing, Ken?
Good. How we doing, fellas?
Hi.
Thoughts and prayers out to the Tisch family.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We echo your sentiments.
Yep. I mean, it's just such a disappointing season, guys. I really can't remember the last time I was so excited about a season before this. I can't remember the last time this has happened when I've been excited about a season, but I really can't remember a complete collapse like we're dealing with right now on such a high expectation season. I mean, it's atrocious. I mean, I'll put it to you this way. I think a lot of fans, including myself, think the same way. We think that had Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall, or Sterling Shepard done what Janoris Jenkins and DRC done, they wouldn't have been suspended. That's not just me. That's a lot on social media. We think that Ben McAdoo has lost the locker room, obviously. And there's a lot of hey, hey, ho, ho, Ben and Jerry's got to go. I don't necessarily think that needs to happen, but I think there's got to be a lot of improvement across the board. Players, coaches, assistant coaches, general managers, owners, everyone needs to do what it takes to win football games, and that's updating the trenches. It doesn't matter who the Rams have at wide receiver because they have a running game and they can play action pass it and freeze your defense for a second to get somebody open. We cannot do that. Why? Because we don't have an offensive line that can protect for our running backs. I mean, that's pretty much all I got, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Ken.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. I mean, playing the trenches, I think you could say that relates to just about every single team. I'd want to revisit his first comment, and I know there was a lot of talk in the locker room yesterday, Paul. Bunch of questions to various players in the wake of the news that Janoris Jenkins was suspended as to, you know, whether or not this is a trend given that DRC was recently suspended. And, you know, we always hear, you know, has the team lost faith in each other? Has the team lost faith in the coaching staff? And you and I were talking about this subject, I believe, around the DRC suspension. And this is what I always say. The eye test is the first indication to me, much more so than the speculation, the chatter in the locker room.
Or the headlines in the papers.
Or the headlines, correct.
Or the social media.
Indeed. That's the first thing you have to go to, even if you're a fan who is going to buy into that narrative.
Yes.
What does the eye test tell you when you've been watching the first seven games of the season, regardless of the record at 1-6? I still see a team that goes out there and The effort is there. The execution has not been there. We could certainly have a boatload of conversations regard to that. But I have yet to see any of these seven performances, Paul, where I've questioned and said, you know what, the fourth quarter's around, this team has given up. The effort's not there. So until I see that, it's hard for me to buy the narrative that there's a disconnect between the players amongst themselves or between the players and what the coaching staff is selling them.
Well, I go back to 2003. Team was 4-4. They'd come off a playoff season the previous year and lost to the 49ers in San Francisco with a field goal debacle. Jim Fassel was the head coach. They proceeded to lose their last eight games of that year. Okay? Seven of them were blowouts. The team quit. They gave up. They were not playing for Coach Fassel.
But you saw that on the field is the point. And the score reflected that.
It was very visible. Okay? It wasn't that it was a bad team. It was that they were lost. So if you can recall that season, you will do yourself a service because remember that and compare that to what you're watching now, and you will see to this point, they're not the same. When it does get to that point, if it does, then you can make the statement that they've given up, they've quit, coaches lost the locker room, and then you have a significant problem because, as you'll remember, after that 2003 season, Jim Fassel was out and Tom Coughlin was brought in. So any of you Giants fans who can go back that far, and it's not that long ago, think of what you watched then as you watched the last nine games of this season, and you're going to have to tell me if you see a similar pattern. If you don't, and to this point I have not, I would say you're unfair to make those comparisons.
Well, because I don't think there's substance to support that.
Not yet.
That's the thing. And chatter in the locker
room. And maybe there won't be. Who knows?
There may not. Correct. But if you look at what we have, and we can only go by what we have, seven games right here. If you're just going based on the eye test or the scores, the Lions game, which was a double-digit victory for Detroit, was a competitive game going into the fourth.
No question.
Until the punt return by Agnew.
Keep going.
Loss to the Eagles. 61-yard
field goal.
Okay. They lost to the Bucks. Comes down to a game-winning field goal by Folk. Chargers game. Melvin Ingram, the forced fumble to set up the offense from going ahead late in that game.
I'm going to let you prove my point for me. Call up the 2003 Giants, read the scores of that losing streak.
Oh, it's day and night in terms of the difference, and that's what I go back to. I'll even say the Seahawks game, by the way, real quickly before we go to 03.
That was a competitive game.
Competitive game. I mean, the Seahawks scored 14 in the fourth, but it was
competitive. Read the scores of this losing streak.
All right, so start of the losing streak was week 10, November 9th. Lost to Atlanta 27-7. Lost to Philadelphia 28-10. Lost to Tampa Bay 19-13. So that was the one single-digit game. Buffalo, they lost 24-7, double digits again. Washington, 20-7, double digits. New Orleans, 45-7.
That was an absolute embarrassment.
Was that the Joe Horn phone game, if memory serves me correct? Okay, I thought so. Dallas, 19-3, and then 37-24 to Carolina in week 17.
Folks, I don't know if you remember that season, but if you can, joggle your memory banks. That's what a team looks like when it quits. That's what a team looks like when it gives up on its coach, and there's really no hope and you're spinning out of control.
So until we get to that point, right now I think it's just a narrative and it's good for headlines and it's convenient because the team is 1-6. But I think if we look at reality, we look at the eye test, I don't think there's much support that this team at least is not trying hard. And the other thing I wanted to point out, Paul, there's a distinct difference between playing below expectations and then playing without effort. Those, to me, are not synonymous with one another. You could say that this team is playing below expectations. I'm not going to disagree with you, but that doesn't mean that it's equivalent to playing without effort.
And I'm trying to think, for those of you who read the daily papers, there might only be one or two beat guys who were here during that 2003 season who could actually tell you they lived it.
Remember it.
They saw it,
compare it.
They remember it. And they know exactly what it looks like when a team quits. I'm not so sure that there's more than one or two of the beat guys who can actually say that. Maybe a couple of columnists, the Glaubers, the Serbys, they could tell you because they've been around a long time. But as far as the daily beat guys, I'm trying to think. It's very hard.
Paul
Schwartz of the Post.
That was going to be the first name that would have come up.
And he might be the only one. Tom Canavan of the Associated Press was here. And that's it.
Maybe one more if you add a columnist, I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, other than that, most of the beat guys, there's been some turnover.
So I would submit to you that there's a good chance, without being insulting to anybody, because they were not here during that stretch, there's a good chance that they don't know what that looks like.
That's fair.
And what that is. So when they write that the things that they're writing or being inflammatory, it's kind of hard for me to take that seriously when they weren't here to see that or to experience that or to live it.
Because looking at scores alone doesn't tell the whole story. For example, if I showed somebody the first seven games of this season, you would look at the Lions score, you'd look at the Seahawks score, and you would make a case, well, those are lopsided games, but the eye test tells you a completely different thing. So that's why if you looked at 0-3, if I just went by the scores alone, I would go immediately to the quit, lack of effort narrative. But you still would have had to have seen the games, is my point, to know that they were also lopsided very early and not necessarily down the wire.
I would say furthermore, when a team really has given up on its coach, you will have many off-the-record conversations with players during the course of the week.
Good point.
And you will know because they won't be afraid to tell you. They may not put their name to it. They may not put it on microphone. But there were many players who told me during that season that the team was done with this situation. And they knew. They couldn't wait for the season to be over.
Yeah.
You know, those off-the-record conversations will happen. They have not happened to this point. And it gets so bad sometimes, as it did during that season, there'll even be guys who will talk on the record with thinly veiled comments that if you kind of figure it out a little bit, it doesn't take much effort to figure out what they're saying. So, please, folks, you know, you can't tell me what chocolate ice cream tastes like unless you've had it.
Back to the food analogies. I'm just disappointed there was no pasta analogy. You let me down with respect to that. One other thing I wanted added on this topic before we get back to the lines, speaking of players talking to the media, I thought what Jonathan Casillas, Paul, had to say yesterday was interesting because he was very upfront. He even talked about how he's had conversations with Janoris Jenkins since he was suspended about taking ownership, taking responsibility. Mm-hmm. DRC spoke to that. But Casillas, one of the questions to Casillas was, we don't ever hear about this with the New England Patriots, was one of the early questions about how, well, you know, Bill Belichick, you never hear about players getting suspended and punished. And Casillas said, oh, it happens. It just doesn't get out to the media. So it relates.
He's right.
But it relates to your point about you could tell when a team is in disarray if the stories start to get out, mm-hmm. if there's anonymous sources who are technically fellow players who are ratting each other out. When a team is unified, when a team is strong, even though the record may not reflect that, those types of stories don't get out. And we haven't seen that from other players throwing fellow teammates who have been suspended under the bus. If anything, I think people have been straightforward when they've been interacting with the media. And DRC, remember, when he returned from his suspension, first thing he said was, hey, I was wrong. Yeah. I took full responsibility for my actions, and then he moved on from there.
You know, I wonder, in 2008, after the Giants won the Super Bowl the previous season, when Plaxico Burress was suspended for a game in September because he had second time he had screwed up and come late to a team meeting. By the way, that 2008 team, as we all know, until the nightclub thing where he had the sweatpants.
Yes,
and the,
I think I recall that.
That team was a better team and was well on its way to being a defending champion. And I remember when Plex got suspended for that game, it was, okay, wow, that's a big deal because, you know, he's a great player. This is a great team. And there was concern over his suspension. But there wasn't any talk like Tom Coughlin's lost the locker room. No. No talk about that at all. Yet Plaxico Burress, and if he were sitting here right now, he'd tell you, he probably got fined more times than any player I ever covered in the history of this team. He was always getting fined. It was kind of like he'd go in the morning, he'd eat his morning breakfast, and there'd be a fine there sitting at the table. Okay?
Before it was like, even issued.
It's like, could you please pass the milk and the fine?
Yes.
Okay?
Well, and Jeff Fiegels could attest to that, I guarantee.
Exactly.
You. Yeah.
So, but was that, did Tom Coughlin lose the team? No. Casillas was so right when he said, this is being overplayed.
And that was his point, comparing the Patriots. saying
totally.
Even, Casillas even said he arrived late at one point when he was with New England. The story never got out. Now you want to say he wasn't a star player. I get that. But there were plenty of guys. Randy Moss was on the Patriots. You're going to tell me that things didn't come up here or there?
How about when Strahan said, you know, when he first got here, when Coughlin got here, he couldn't stand Coughlin because Coughlin was so quick with the fines. Okay? What happens is, once you establish the rough times, the agitating times, then you have to move on and see what comes after that before you make a judgment. What happens in the wake of the situations that have occurred? Well, guess what? Ben McAdoo has now reached his first huge crisis as an NFL football coach. Okay? This season is his first huge crisis. What happens in the wake of these huge crises? The record, the injuries, the media storm around his team. How do they handle the next 9 games? Folks, if it doesn't go well, if everything goes right down the tubes, right into the bottom of the well, if you will, I'll be the first one to tell you, and hey, I'll say it is what it is, and obviously the Giants need to do something about this. But until that happens, until the next 9 games play out, and we see what happens in the wake of the upsetment, it is irresponsible to make concrete decisions. Because it's not going to help you make the playoffs this year. Nothing you do this week is going to help you make the playoffs. This season is what it is. So what you have to figure out is, over the course of the next 2 months, keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, then figure out how to fix it and move forward. That's it.
If anything, it's the evaluation process, what you're laying out for what's going to happen in the offseason, and you know who's going to be here, who's not, and who wants to be a part of it. That's essentially what the next few months are about. Yeah,
that's it.
It's not necessarily a debate over wins and losses and who's on the field and who's making an impact. All right, let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Richie is on Long Island. Richie, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? Nice to talk to you again.
Hi. Doing all right, Richie. What do you got for us?
Not much. So I was thinking about it the other day. So me and my family, we drove down to the Eagles game this past season. Did not see that outcome coming. It was, pretty tough to watch. The same people I was going to this inside the stadium from the Eagles fans was the same people I was seeing on my way out saying, well, I told you so, so I had to put the head down on that one. And then last season I went to the Steelers game, drove to the Steelers game for with family. So on that note, I think I'm just going to cancel the road.
Yeah, you don't have a great track record there, Richie. Especially games in the state of Pennsylvania, I should add.
Or maybe next time you go to a game on the road, you bring a four-leaf clover with you. How about that?
We are 0-2 in Pennsylvania, state of Pennsylvania. So not a good look. So I think maybe I'm just going to cancel the away games.
Okay.
Just like you guys are saying, you know, I'm really looking forward to the next, 9 games, how players react, how, the coaching staff reacts. Of course, media always wants to blow, things out of proportion, when they smell blood, kind of sort of thing, feed into it, oh, the world is coming down, but I just want to see, how, I really hope Sterling Shepard can, get back healthy, because I really want to see how, he steps up, Evan Ingram, the young players. And also, what you were saying, Shane Smith, I definitely would, like to see Shane Smith play, because, to see, what these players can do. But what kind of got to me was last season, the run game, we always talked about it, right? So you brought in the same players. Now I get it. You were kind of buying in, they were here at the, they were there at the facility working hard, but that's, I guess you can call it as a gamble, as a chance. You thought bringing in the same players were going to, or doing the same things were going to lead to different results. That's just a little unfair. I don't think you could have. They should have did it maybe a little bit better, because, we hear about Rhett Ellison, being signed in. Oh, he's going to help. Brandon Marshall is a run-blocking type of wide receiver. And those things just didn't even come to pass. I don't know. But one thing also, too, Perkins. Perkins just didn't seem like the same player to me as he did last season. Seemed like maybe lost confidence or something like that.
Well, they clearly did not start strong out of the gates in terms of the run game, and then unfortunately he suffered the rib injury, and while he was out, Orleans Darkwood took advantage of his opportunity, and Wayne Goleman had opportunities as well. So, I mean, I still think the sample size is small, but I would agree with you. The surge we saw at the end of last season with Paul Perkins did not carry over at the start of this season. Now that he's back to full health, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how the running backs play out. I don't think that Darkwa is in any position to lose reps as a result of Paul Perkins being healthy, but Perkins is now back in the mix. I'd be interested to see what type of a role he has, and will he even be active? Because remember, you know, they can't dress every single running back now that the group is getting back to full health. You still have Shane Vereen in the mix, too.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't know. Does it seem to me that – I don't know how many snaps he's really played, but it just seems like Shane Vereen has been like a little underutilized this season. I would have liked to see him, you know, a little bit more, you know.
No argument from me on that one. I'll tell you that.
I'll actually bring it up. It's a fair question. I mean, I know we were talking about the snap count for Rhett Ellison earlier in the year. Shane Vereen has played on offense 32% of the snaps.
Okay.
And you know, the issue, or at least the flip that Coach McAdoo will say, is that especially in the first month of the season, they weren't getting enough snaps, period, to get enough of their personnel on the field. There was certainly truth to that. Okay,
they need the at-bats.
They did not have enough of time of possession. Now, it's gotten better in recent times, but I still don't think I've seen enough of Shane Vereen, personally, for my liking.
Going forward, I would still like to see him more. I don't know, is he signed with the team next year, or does he become a
This is
a
his final season of his deal.
Oh, okay, all right. But, yeah, I still, you know, would like to see him a little bit more. I think he, you know, has more that he can bring to the table. But for this, you know, going forward, I just want to see, you know, the young guys in. You know, I want to see you know, what we have for next season, you know, coming up. You know, this, like you guys keep saying, this is evaluation time. And, you know, you want to see how players react, you know, to this. You know, you don't want to see them take off. Who does, you know? But this is all, like, you know, everything they're putting on film right now is adding to their resume for next season.
Well, especially guys who are going to be free agents, too, because they're auditioning to either stay with the team or move on elsewhere. And, Richie, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. You got it. So, I mean, I think it's important to also see what your starters are doing, too, even though maybe mathematically you may not be in it, because you're evaluating whether or not you want to retain certain guys, re-sign certain players. Remember, there's offensive linemen that are due to become free agents, Justin Pugh, Weston Richburg. Let's not forget about that. You can't just go, I think, to the mindset, Paul, where we're just going to play the rookies when you also still need to evaluate the established guys.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that they have to figure out, in addition to just those players, you also have to figure out from a scheme perspective, you know, did we give these players the right opportunity to show their wares? And that's what they were supposed to do during the self-scout. They were supposed to clean up their schemes, clean up their playbook, because it's very hard to judge a guy if it turns out you haven't used him properly. So it's a two-step process over the bye week when you're in the pickle that the Giants are in right now. It's figuring out, are we giving them their best chance to show their best stuff? And then did the player show his best stuff when we gave him the opportunity to? It's a twofold process, and that's what we have to watch now very carefully.
Well, in terms of the young players, in the first half of the season, Wayne Goleman had some opportunities. If you at least look at the rookie class, Evan Engram, his role has grown. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those players, you can't argue. Dalvin Tomlinson has been in the mix.
I think he's played well. Right? You agree?
Numbers don't always jump off the page, but I agree with you.
Because it's hard at that position.
Yeah, of course. You're not going to get 100
tackles.
Well.
He's shown me in his rookie season he's a part of this future. He's a player.
So those are the top three guys that come to mind when you look at the rookie class. Could Spag say to himself, now that you have Olivier Vernon banged up, Kerry Wynn, will Avery Moss's reps and snaps increase? I don't think that's a stretch. Maybe perhaps they'll look to advance how much he can impact in a game. I mean, Spags has said they've seen progression, they've seen improvement in practice. Now maybe they'll allow him to spread his wings a little bit more. So that would be, I think, a young player to watch out for in the second half of the season. Let's head back to the lines. Tony is in Hoboken. Tony, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing all right, Tony. What do you got for us?
I was actually just at my office, but I just got out of my office right now.
It's a pleasure to speak to you guys, Lance and Pauly Dot.
Hello.
Nice to speak with you.
I was actually going to talk about, like, the Rams right now, the Rams and the Giants.
Yeah.
They remind me of pretty much like a sort of like a same team, above average defense and offense, and the offense has some explosive people in it. But they're just missing one piece, it feels like. And then all of a sudden, so then now they get Whitworth, and Whitworth is the main – he is a big key reason why they're 5-2. Now, it just makes me think, if we would have had him, he's almost the same age as Eli. He could have lasted at least 3 or 4 years with us, just like Eli. Yeah. And when they can both retire at the same time, that would have been his bodyguard for the rest of his career. And he would have really helped this offensive line. That's my opinion. And for Shane Smith, definitely. I was so mad when they put him to the practice squad. I was so disappointed. Right there, I knew that they weren't going to do any sort of running. But Shane Smith, yes, definitely. I got to go. Paulie Dots, Lance, you're the best, bro. You guys are the best.
All right, Tony, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. I mean, they have run the ball effectively, even though Shane Smith hasn't been in the mix. So to say that they abandoned the run game by moving Shane Smith off the 53-man roster, I think is a little bit misleading. The point about Andrew Whitworth, which I know has been a huge narrative in the media this week because the Giants are going up against a team that won the free agency battle, as to, you know, whether or not his arrival here in New York would have drastically changed things, I will simply go back to what we talked about all offseason, which is the amount of money that left tackles were paid. Whitworth got a lot of money himself, Paul.
There are your numbers.
As you're bringing up the numbers here.
Please tell these folks how much it costs.
Screen faded away. Oh. If you could, yes, bring it back. It's playing some games on you in terms of.
Look at these
of,
numbers. Look at these numbers.
Yeah, so he got a
his
3-year
cap number
deal
this year. Look at this. 9.1 mil. Next year, 12. The year after, 12.
Total cap hit over the course of the 3 years is near $34 million. Just to give you an idea, because he wound up signing a 3-year deal. So he's 36 this year, 37, 18, and 38 years old in 2019.
And we don't even know about his durability. How do you even know he's going to make it till the end of the season?
You don't. You never know that.
And much like Joe Thomas, played like every game. Okay, this guy's got a lot of mileage. You think Joe Thomas thought he was going to get hurt and be done?
Guy played over 10,000 consecutive snaps, yeah.
And Whitworth has played a ton of football, too. Do the Rams even know he's going to make it till the end of this season? At that age? With that kind of money on your cap? And I got somebody who said to me, well, they should have signed him, but they get rid of him after the year. What's the big deal? All right, that means $5.8 million dead money on your cap next year if you cut him after the season. Do you really want to carry that money on your cap next year?
Plus, you could develop a younger guy during the time that you gave him the playing time if he's only a 1-year rental. It's like people calling in to say that they should add these wide receivers. So I'm like, what's the point of adding a veteran wide receiver who you're renting for 9 games when you could develop a younger player who's already on the roster?
I remember at the end of last season, people said, you know, what do you do? And I said, free agency, I'd look at Whitworth, I'd look at Reef. Those were the two guys I was on board with. And I said, if you can get Whitworth for like a 1-year deal, you consider doing it at a solid, reasonable price on a 1-year deal. Depends on what he wants. Well, with the deal he got from the Rams, I thought it was outlandish. No, that's it. If I want to buy a Ford, all right, and I walk into the Ford dealer and the guy wants to charge me the price for a Mercedes, I'm not doing it. I'm walking out. Same thing with Riley Reiff. Riley Reiff was 11 mil?
I think around that ball.
For Riley Reiff?
Yeah, he went to the Vikings from the Lions.
The dude's not a Pro Bowl lineman, okay? My feeling of Riley Reiff was...
Everybody got a lot of money at that position.
You want to give him 6 or 7? Reasonable number? Let's do it. But guy got double digits. No, and at that point, my comment was, I got off of those guys immediately and said, okay, if they're going to break your cap and they're going to hurt your cap and you're going to have, you know, overpay for these guys significantly, then you stay away. How do you think the Giants got burned with Jeff Schwartz? They overpaid for Jeff Schwartz. They got burned.
Hurt.
They got overpaid for David Boss. They got burned. You want to keep overpaying for guys year after year after year? and repeat the same mistakes, that's called stupidity.
Now, Whitworth has had a significant impact for the L.A. Rams. If anybody wants to bring up that point, I would agree with you 100%.
Through 2 months,
he has had a significant impact in terms of their running game and protected Jared Goff. I will not disagree with anybody. But I think it's also important, if we want to have this debate, I'm going to go back to Jerry Reese's comments at his after the bye press conference, Paul. And he specifically said the goal was to get younger on the offensive line. They did not want to add age on the offensive line. And that was the mindset. So if that's the mindset, then a 36-year-old at left tackle does not equal that narrative. That's the mindset of the front office, and that's exactly what Jerry Reese told the media. So, you know, we're not fabricating, we're not making up stories. If that's the rationale, then if you still want to come back and argue Andrew Whitworth, how does a 36-year-old fit into getting younger on the offensive line, Paul? Those things don't add up there. So, you know, that was also part of the thinking and the direction that they had this offseason. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number.
I only want to add one other thing here, okay? And that is you must take into account at all times when you sign a veteran to a multi-year deal, there are going to be cap implications beyond this season. Please don't forget that. And when people say, well, okay, again, you can cut him. Then you have dead money. The Giants, habitually, year after year after year, are one of the bottom five teams in amount of dead money to carry against next year's cap. They do a marvelous job at keeping the dead money number low. Right now, their dead money going into next year, I believe, is about $4 million or something. It's a low number. You cut Whitworth $5.8 million just on him alone in dead money. Do you have any idea what that does to your cap when you have to carry dead money into next year's salary cap?
Yeah, it's crippling. You work on ways to maybe spread it out, and then it starts impacting multiple
seasons.
You have
to ask like six guys to redo their deals.
Yeah,
that's never good.
A big headache. Yeah. So
please don't ignore that, people. Don't ignore that. You as a GM, you must take that into account. People forget that all the time. Oh, we'll just cut the guy. Dead money will hurt you. That's all. I can't emphasize that enough. But the newspaper guys don't want to write about that because it's boring. It's boring. Doesn't get clicks.
Well, and that's what happens during a 1-6 season. Nobody wants to break down the Rams and the outlook for a game. It's easier to speculate on the juicy stuff or the stuff that didn't necessarily come to fruition. Let's head back to the phone lines. I want to give more people an opportunity to weigh in. Robert, he's in Miami. Robert, what's happening?
Hey, it's a pleasure to talk to you guys. I go back to the days when Darryl Dess and Jack Stroud and Ray Wiseteka were playing.
There you go.
Very nice. So what do you got for us, Robert?
Well, anyway, a couple of points. First of all, as far as McAdoo losing the team, the Denver game proved to me that, you know, he did a fabulous job of keeping the team together. And even the Seattle game, the Giants fought hard, were just undermanned, you know, having suffered all those injuries. So I don't think he's lost the team at all. I think when it comes to that, he's had the guys playing hard, and, you know, hopefully that'll continue. As far as Jerry Reese is concerned, I think he's been sort of underrated the quality of his last couple of drafts. Drafted some really good players, some guys that weren't obvious picks, even Odell Beckham Jr. at 13 was not an obvious pick, and he plucked him out. And if you gave him a truth serum, I think if he got up in front of the press, he would say, hey, listen, guys, we were really unlucky. The year that we needed to upgrade our offensive line, like you guys were saying, the only way we could have done it was to severely overpay for old linemen. You know, the year before, we have our young linemen coming up for renegotiating the contracts. And there was really nothing available in the draft, maybe one or two offensive linemen that were worth anything. So, you know, I think both McAdoo and Reese are, you know, not really to blame as to what has taken place so far this season. Hopefully we'll get ourselves back on track and play hard and win a couple of games, and next year will be better for us.
All right, Robert.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
I just want to say that, you know, it's one thing to even look at the play on the field, but you must understand every general manager has to make moves also based on the business of those contracts.
It's It's a huge part
and
of
that,
the decision-making
process.
And that
is the part that most fans, and I get it, fans don't understand the contract part of it. They just look at the field and they say, that player stinks. That player would be really good for us. Okay, I get it. There's no question. No one's going to argue that Whitworth today, okay, on November 2nd, is it today? November
Correct.
2nd.
Yes, you're on point.
Whitworth is a better left tackle than Ereck Flowers. Right now, today, he's a better football player. I'd be a fool to argue against that. Obviously, he's a better left tackle than Ereck Flowers is, okay? But there are so many other things that come into play when you talk about getting one player out and moving one player in. So many things are involved. And so, you know, this isn't fantasy football, folks. This isn't video game football. It's not that simple. You don't just hit a button and say, oh, I'm playing Madden. Delete Ereck Flowers. Upload Ereck Whitworth.
Yeah.
I'm playing Madden. Whitworth is my left tackle. It's not that simple. There's it doesn't work that way.
Cap hits, dead money, all of those other entities within
That's
the
why
salary
I tell
cap.
You. When yeah. I tell you that football is a domino a game, domino effect game, and it's a spider web, it's not only that way on the field, it's that way off the field too. And so many people don't get that part of it.
Well, that's why part of every front office, you have a cap expert. You have somebody on staff whose job is specifically to understand
Kevin Abrams
the finances.
Does
Correct.
That for the Giants, and he's very good
yeah,
at it.
Yeah, because you need somebody so that if you walk into their office, Paul, and you ask them, if we were to sign this guy and we added 3 years, X amount of dollars, where would that put us in 2019? Yeah. You want to ask that question. You have to ask that question.
You have to.
And when you know
18, not even 19.
That's what I'm saying. Close years, far years. And when you also think about Justin Pugh, Weston Richburg becoming free agents, you have to think about that, what you potentially want to do with those players, mm-hmm. whether or not you're at the point, Paul, where you've evaluated them enough or you need to see another season.
Absolutely.
Before you go about signing guys a season or two prior. All of those things have to work into the dynamics. I don't want to get off topic. I want to get to a few more phone calls, but I want to add one other thing which yes. is related to this. I was getting a lot of tweets around extremely busy trade deadline. I mean, my goodness, mm-hmm. who would have thought that there was that much movement, especially for players leaving contending teams. That's mm-hmm. what I think was the biggest surprise. But there was a lot of chatter before the report came out that the Dolphins weren't going to move Jarvis Landry. But right. I don't know if you saw the Dolphins were thinking about shopping Jarvis Landry.
Well,
that was the initial report.
Beckham tweeted that he wanted him here.
Well, but there was an initial report that the Dolphins yes. were listening, okay? Yes. So I got a few tweets about how, well, why don't the Giants go out, you know, because he's friendly with Beckham, and why don't they right. go out and acquire Jarvis Landry? So the first thing I'm thinking is, yes, on paper in the fantasy video game world, Paul, lining up Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry is phenomenal, right?
Love to have him in Madden.
No doubt. Then you say to yourself, they came in the same draft class.
How are they going to pay them?
How are they going to pay two of those players equal money, fit them in the cap, and oh, by the way, you guys and gals want an offensive line on top of that? How are you going to do that? I mean, that's when you have to take a step back and realize how the financial implications
that,
play a big
my
role.
Friend, is truly fantasy football.
Yeah, well, that's why I brought that up. I understand it was a pipe dream and it was a hypothetical, but I brought that
Ridiculous.
Up because of the logic that goes into that is the same thing we're talking about with evaluating offensive linemen and so forth.
And by the way, I know we want to get to the calls. Yeah. I'm just going to throw this number out to you. Stats, Inc., which does assign sack stats to offensive linemen. They've got Whitworth allowing 3 sacks so far this year. My film study has Ereck Flowers allowing 4 sacks so far this year.
And they've both played 7 games. So it's pretty much an equal sample
Again,
size.
Not saying that they're neither the same player, because they're not.
And sacks is not the only way to evaluate an
offensive
lineman.
Of course not. Pressures, which I don't have.
Run blocking, too.
I don't have pressures and hurries. Yeah. I don't have the run blocking stats. I will tell you, Whitworth is a much better run blocker than he is a pass blocker
yes.
at left tackle. That's a fact. But, you know, for everybody who wants to voodoo doll Ereck Flowers, he has not given up a sack since Ziggy Ansah got him for 3 sacks in Detroit week 2. Okay? Actually, home. It's home game against Detroit. That means Philly, Tampa, L.A. Chargers, Denver, Seattle. 5 games in a row, Ereck Flowers has not been beaten for a sack. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
No, I think that's important to know. I'll throw another stat out. Eric Flowers has just 3 penalties on the season. What was something we talked about last year?
13 last year, I think.
He had double digits. I believe he actually finished with the team lead. I'll look up the specific number, but
I think it was 13.
He has 3 penalties this season, and I've got the breakdown here. I don't think he's had a penalty, I want to say, in at least the last 4 games, if memory serves me correct. Let's see. Flowers had a holding penalty against the Cowboys in the opener. Then he had an illegal shift penalty against the Eagles, and he had a holding call against the Eagles in that same game. So Eric Flowers has not had a penalty since week 3 of this season. In the last four games, he has had no penalties, Eric Flowers.
He had 14 flags last year, of which one was declined.
So 13 that were charged against him. Okay.
So let's see. Seems like progress to me, right?
I would agree with you. I think that's a very fair point.
But those with the voodoo doll keep sticking pins. They keep sticking
pins. It's hard to put down the voodoo doll if you like to play with toys. So,
yeah.
But
just
those stats, I think, are an indication that, from a statistical standpoint, it is fair to say there has been drastic improvement. And just to give you an idea.
And by the way, he needs to get better. Let's make that clear.
Absolutely.
He needs to get better. But don't disregard and ignore the fact that there has been progress, because if you do, you're living a lie. That's not a fact. The fact is he's better.
An improvement from a player never means that a player doesn't have to continue to improve. It just means that there is, at least from comparing 16 to 17, I think it's fair to say that he has come a long way. And just to give you an idea,
there you go.
Eli Apple leads the team right now with 6 penalties, if you just want an idea of what the penalty...
There's a guy who's had a tough season.
...aspect looks like. And then you've got a bunch of guys with 3, Hart, Flowers and Hart are the 2 offensive linemen who are in that grouping. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We want to squeeze in as many as we can. Jeff is in Rhode Island. Jeff, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon,
Hi.
Guys.
How are
you
Jeff?
Doing today?
Doing all right. What do you got for us?
Good. Paulie, my question is for you in regards to Shane Smith.
Yes.
Given our wide receiver situation at this particular point in time, it seems to me that Eli is going to have pretty much only 2 really good receivers to throw to for the rest of the season. That'll be Engram and
Shepard
when he comes back.
And Roger Lewis, to some degree. I still think people think that there's some upside there. So perhaps he could be in that group.
Yeah, maybe so. I'm just saying I don't have a whole lot of positive feeling about those.
The resume
guys.
Of the group isn't great.
Squad guys.
I understand.
But my question is this. In regards to Smith, how could we use him in his blocking to perhaps, get our other tight end out in a pass route? Because it seems to me Eli's going to need a whole lot of targets to throw to, because of the lack of a wide receiver skill players.
Another
can we
reason.
Use him? Can we use him in some formations to help out with the blocking?
Another reason why I think it would behoove the Giants to activate him, because if you run a standard set with 2 wides, a tight end, and a fullback out of the eye, well, then Engram could be used more to go out and pass routes, and you keep Smith in the backfield to help out with the pass protection. That's going to come at the expense of Ellison snaps, though. And I will tell you, you could certainly argue they've underutilized him as well. But to this point, I don't think they're getting maximum production out of Ellison. They're not getting maximum production out of Arena. They're certainly not getting anything out of Smith. He's on the practice squad. Is this not the time to start trying to see what those guys might be able to do to help you?
That's my
opinion.
100%, no doubt. I mean, all the way. I'm with it. I mean, we got a 9-game season, so let's see what we got in the cupboard.
it's time to find out. And that's not just a Shane Smith thing from a personnel perspective. That's a schematic thing. Find
right,
out
exactly.
if that schematic will work for your team, and then find out if that player will work for your team. I think there's a twofold upside if it turns out good.
Right. Well, I'm on board with that, so I guess it remains to see what happens. So.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I'm not hauling up the white flag just yet. I've been a Giants fan for close to 50 years now, so I'm not quitting on them.
I understand. Thank you
Hi,
for
Jeff.
Checking in with us.
Have a good day.
Appreciate the call. Let's hear from Mike in Fort Myers, Florida. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, I'll answer your Shane Smith. The previous caller pretty much said the same thing. My question is, what will McAdoo really, how will he utilize the fullback? I think much of what the previous caller had said about utilizing him as a blocker in this particular game against the Rams, because they've got a power nose tackle.
Yep.
I think that would help, and that might give Eli a little bit more time to throw the ball. I saw a statistic yesterday where they have immediately forgotten, you know, the senior citizen laps here, that Eli holds he's getting rid of the ball quicker than most of the quarterbacks.
That's true.
And so you got to give Eli time, because our wide receivers are inexperienced. They may need more time
to
break free of tight tackling. So I would bring Shane Smith on board. The other question I have to you is something that you guys were talking about Jerry Reese and his goal. And there's a former coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. He said, you know, the goal is to win the game. And I think that's, to me, the goal is to win the game. If you can get younger while you're doing that, that's a wonderful attribute. But I think the goal is to win every single game that you have. And just to say, well, we're going to bring young players on board, if you're really certain that they're going to stick, that's fine. But if you've got a chance to go get some people that you think might really help you, you know, Whitworth is a second guess right now. I mean, everybody is second guessing and saying,
right,
wow, would we have won more games with him at left tackle than Eric Flowers? Probably yes, because Flowers has this year, his rating as a blocker has really dropped. He's not a good run blocker.
Well, but Mike, real quickly, I just want to jump in here. You know, if you want to play the game of substitution where, you know, if Whitworth was on this team, they'd win a few more games. Here's the thing, though. Whitworth doesn't make up for missed tackles on defense.
Bad punts.
Yes, he doesn't make up for
injured
miscues
receivers
on special teams. There were a lot of other things that went wrong this season to say specifically that it's just the offensive line.
Yeah.
If we're going to be fair and evaluate this,
I can't see it.
You were talking about, you know, your level of performance, and I was talking, I think, about Russ the other day about, you know, whether or not level of performance. We've got guys that are performing at a substandard basis.
Yep.
How many people get cut where we say that's no longer acceptable? We don't cut them. We don't know if there's fines being issued or not. But we don't seem to be setting the bar high enough. And it may be painful to cut a guy, because you might be bringing somebody in off the street that isn't any better. But at least you're setting a tone and a message that we expect more. And if you're not going to perform, you're going to get out of here. And I don't.
Well, Mike, I get that. But remember, it goes back to what Paul and I were talking about earlier. It's one thing to send a message. It's another thing to cut a guy. And then you're left with a bunch of dead money. And then all of a sudden it's impacting your cap in future year. I mean, you have to be financially responsible.
Correct.
When you make decisions like that. And you're not just going to get rid of starters who you invested a lot of money in just because you want to send a message to the court of public opinion.
It's nice to say that we can send a message by cutting a player, but there are only unique circumstances that allow you to afford that opportunity to do so. It's a luxury. It's a luxury to be able to do that.
Well, who are we talking about cutting?
I'm not going to win. If I want to win the NFC East, I'm not going to be sitting there worried about cap space next year because somebody else is supposed to manage that. I want to put the best team out there. And I think bringing up this financial stuff is just a deflection. Okay,
no, but Mike,
needs to have the best players.
But Mike,
it's not the coach's decision,
Mike,
though.
I agree with you that winning at all costs is important. I appreciate the phone call. I want to try to squeeze in another one. But I disagree with his point that you have to win at all costs and lose sight of what's going to come the following season. Because in the NFL, you like to call it you use a term. I call it parity.
The quicksand of mediocrity.
That's why I wanted you to word it
correctly,
so I didn't butcher it. And it's very hard to consistently win football games in this league and consistently build off of strong seasons like we're seeing with the Giants. Mm-hmm. They're coming off an 11-win campaign. They're now left with one win in their first seven. So if you start throwing out the finances and saying, we're going to put everything we can into one season, there's no way you're going to continue to pursue consistency the following years.
What happens is, and there's no guarantee just because you built the best team on paper, with the money you've spent. Like, remember the Redskins some years ago when they bought Albert Haynesworth, and then they had the best team money could buy? Then the Eagles had the best team money could buy.
The dream team with Vince Young.
And what happens?
And then they got to rebuild because they got to rip it apart.
Well, what happens is there are so many factors that can derail your plans. No matter, best laid plans sometimes go awry. You could have the best laid plans, spend all that money recklessly because we're going to win this year. We're going to spend all our money and win this year. And then you don't. And now you're screwed for the next 4 years because you did not be responsible with your money. Can't do it.
Yeah,
not in this league.
You can't dismiss that. It's very easy to say
he's
dismiss
a, he's
it,
a
but
great
you
fan and a great caller.
No, and I think he made a valid point. I don't
just
disagree.
He needs to understand more of the business side of what happens with a football team. And that's why
Which
the GM gets
about.
Hired and that's why the cap guy gets hired. The coach has nothing to do with that part of it. And that's the only thing I want to say. He was trying to be critical. I thought he said coach. The coach doesn't have anything to do with the business side of this. That's not his call.
Well, and wisely so. I mean, listen, there are some coaches in other sports that serve as management.
And even in football.
But it's difficult to do that because you want to be focused on the X's and O's.
And here it doesn't work that way.
Correct.
The coach is totally absent from the business room of the football operation.
The separation of church and state. So yes. The money people can handle the money and the coach can focus on the scheme.
Important to know that.
Yes. All right. Well, we'd like to maybe separate from this next caller, but unfortunately we'll give him time. Charlie's in Portland, Maine.
Even though we're overtime.
Yeah, exactly.
We're actually overtime,
we're being
Charlie.
Kind to
we're
allow
being
him
kind
on the
to
program.
Get to you. We're
yeah,
overtime.
Just remember that, Charlie. Yeah.
Go.
Look, Eric Flowers had 21 pressures so far. Wentworth has had 11. Flowers couldn't even carry his gym bag. That's how, I mean, Wentworth would have been a total upgrade. Just listen to what the coaches are saying. And his guaranteed money was $15 million. It wasn't a ton of money. $15 million guaranteed. You tell me this guy couldn't play 2 years? I understand when Jerry says we're getting younger, he should have said we need to get better. It's got nothing to do with youth. It's about getting better, just like the last caller said. Look, we could have had him. It would have changed our whole offensive line. Yeah, we could have won more games. The Rams are 5-2. We're 1-6.
Charlie, you're so wrong. You are so wrong. It's not even funny. And you are so wrong with this receiving core.
With the receiving core
injured, with the missed tackles that this defense had in the first month of the season, with the poor punts at the end of the game by Brad Wing, you're going to tell me
we had a left tackle who could block.
Listen, I get it. This is your point. We've been talking about it throughout the offseason. I'm not telling you to get rid of the point, but to say that, as I just brought up with Mike, the previous caller, to say that one player alone, if you add him to the mix, is now going to give you four additional wins,
ridiculous,
to me is completely misleading. And to say that the Rams are 5-2 simply because they signed Andrew Whitworth, when if you look at the other things they've done, what does Whitworth do for special teams, Charlie? Special teams has been solid for the Rams. Greg Zuerlein, I mean, all the field goals, what does Whitworth have to
Their
do with that?
Their defense has been
correct.
Terrific.
Whitworth so, was allowed have to feel comfortable and to be a better quarterback this year.
But that's one facet of the team is my point.
Here's
Charlie.
Where we agree. Whitworth is a much better left tackle than Eric Flowers is today. There's no question about that. His career resume deserves that respect. We totally agree on that. But that's right. Where it ends. That's where it ends.
Yeah, I mean, if
at least we agree on something.
No, absolutely.
But Charlie, I would agree with you 100% if your argument was the offense would have improved if Andrew Whitworth was on this team. To say the entire team and the win total improves is not then taking into consideration the issues the Giants have had on defense and special
and
teams.
And
I'm
not
season.
Even sure the offense would have been much better because Gurley right now is playing a heck of a lot better than any of the Giants.
And I'm not disagreeing with you, Paul, but I don't think it's a stretch to say that if you added Whitworth at left tackle, that perhaps
you could talk about it.
Correct. You can have that conversation. It's a fair conversation.
Yes.
It's unfair to say one win goes to five if Whitworth is here alone.
No way.
That, to me, doesn't tell the whole story. That's all I'm
saying. That's all, Charlie.
Look, I'm hoping these last nine games, either we go 9-0 or we go 0-9. So I got a feeling we're closer to go 0-9 than 9-0. But I think this game, the Rams are going to, like, put up 40 points. I think this is a game where it's going to be a blowout, and it's not going to be good. Giants fans are going to be booing like heck. I mean, because they're going to be able to run the ball, and Eli's not going to have any time, and it's going to be, I don't know. The Rams have been scoring a bunch of points.
They have, yeah.
And I just think this is going to be one of those blowout games, and then you might say, you know, McAdoo is losing the team. But like I said, I hope I'm not right, but I get a feeling we are, and we needed to get better, and it is on Jerry Reese. And if we go 3-13, he won't be here next year. So,
all right, Charlie.
All right, Charlie.
Appreciate the phone
call.
Take
care.
You got it. It is going to be a challenge, especially in the trenches. Before we go, I know we teased it. I know
we
are
overtime.
But we did tease it, so I don't want to at least not mention it. Real quickly, Pro Football Focus. So they project the Eagles at 12 wins. They project the Cowboys at 9. The Redskins at 7 and the Giants at 6 is their projection.
Which means they think the Giants are going 5-4 over the final 9 games of the year.
Yes.
That doesn't sound like a team that's quit.
No.
Just saying.
And they also bring up the remaining strength of schedule to date and the remaining strength of schedule. So the strength of schedule to date was 16th for the Giants, the remaining strength of schedule 31st. So it is going to be a challenge forward. No doubt about
that. We got to get out of here.
Yes, indeed. All right. Appreciate the phone calls. Good dialogue as always. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running tomorrow at noon Eastern. And get set for the Rams on Sunday as we will be talking about it all in great detail on Monday's program. For Paul DeTino, I'm Lance Meadow.
See ya.
We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.